Welcome back, everyone. This is the Bless Your Boys podcast. BlessYourBoys.com is your home for all things Detroit Tigers baseball on the SB Nation platform. I'm your host, Brandon Day, and with me, my co-host, Ashley McLennan. How's it going?
Hello, who are you?
I know.
What is this?
I know. It's been, it's probably been about a month since we managed to get one done, but man, it just gets too crazy in September.
Yeah, it's like we had our own postseason, and we just had too much to do.
That is
so,
what it feels
sorry,
like.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, that is what it feels like. And, well, especially for you, because at least you had, you know, teams that were in it that you also, you know, edit and write for and stuff.
So, yeah.
Like, somehow your attention wasn't completely devoted to the Tigers, Ashley. For shame.
I have enough attention to go around, Brandon. Thank you very much.
I know, you know, I was thinking, like, oh, we should talk about the September call-ups and who, you know, who showed out and stuff. And, man, even that, I was just sort of like, you know, Spencer Turnbull looked pretty good. But other than that, I'm kind of like, meh.
Yeah, kind of a yawn. I mean, we had Stewart come up and Stewart got injured pretty much almost immediately.
Yeah, we got like two weeks of him, maybe.
Yeah, which is, you know, really just the Tigers, you know, TM. That's really just sums it up right there.
Nobody's going to end up getting Tommy John or needing major shoulder surgery, but they will all be hurt some other bizarre fashion, guaranteed.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And they sent him, I think, to the same doctor they sent everybody else to right before they needed to get some kind of surgery. So, yay.
Yeah, I know. That's just kind of how it went. You know, the season kind of went out like a lamb. It came in like a lamb. It was very lambish the whole way.
Just a whole bunch of lambs to the slaughter is what it was.
Just a lot of plaintive bleating all year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, the Tigers ended up, you know, winning 64 games, which was a little worse, actually, than I think I had them pegged. I think I had them at 69.
I went for 72 was my prediction.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, really, you know, maybe if Miggy had stayed healthy, you know, a couple things had gone their way that wouldn't have been unattainable. The Tigers did lose something like 24 one-run games.
If only that goddamn rally goose had shown up a month earlier.
Yep. Or stayed later. I really think Mike Fiers took the rally goose mojo with him when he left.
What a jerk.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And
yeah, it's so funny to me that, like, you know what, we even ahead of the season, because I wrote the acquisition article when Mike Fiers came on, and I remember saying, you know what, this would be great, is even if you can, like, you know, set him up as trade bait. And now it's like, as soon as he left, we're like, god damn it, why did you have to go get good and leave, even though at the beginning of the season we knew that was precisely what his value was.
Yep. And the odds of him, you know, coming out and pitching that well again next year probably aren't great.
No.
But that's hard to know. I mean, Mike Fiers is going to be, what, 33 next year? Yeah, it's kind of hard to imagine him coming back and doing that same thing all over again. And, of course, the A's got eliminated last night. So,
well, they didn't start Mike Fiers, which is my favorite joke, and nobody thinks it's funny. And then I'm going to keep telling it as long as Mike Fiers is in baseball.
They didn't start the fires? Is that what the joke is?
Oh, I gotcha. They didn't start Mike Fiers. The random Billy Joel reference for everybody out there. You're welcome.
If you stay till the end, you'll hear our you know, our rendition of Longest Time.
No.
Duet version. Come on,
no
Ashley.
One will ever make me sing anywhere that anyone can hear it.
Okay.
It's my one thing I go to. Like, everyone's like, is there anything you're not good at? And I'm like, yes.
I am not singing for you people.
I cannot sing to save my life. Does not stop me from belting the Hamilton soundtrack in my car, but that is a different story. Yeah, but it's funny that, like, you have all these folks on your team and you have one game to make it happen, and they went with a bullpen.
Yeah.
Which was an interesting A's choice there.
Yeah, and then, you know, of course, because it didn't go well, you know, I had to listen to every, like, old guy pundit everywhere today, all like, see, the bullpenning thing, you know, it's just, it's not sustainable, and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, they were just talking about, I'm watching the Dodgers Braves game, and they were literally just talking about that before we started recording, about, oh, you know, it's going to have negative effects, and you need a guy with a good rotation, and blah, 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 and I'm like, or you just need a team that knows what they're doing when it comes to bullpenning. You can't just decide to do it one day.
Yeah.
You need to, like, really look at what's worked and what doesn't work and figure it out from there.
Yeah, you have to have the right personnel. And, you know, it can definitely go wrong. I mean, you know, it is true that, like, I'd still take an ace over bullpenning any time. There just aren't that many ace-type guys around, you know? Just, you know, teams are trying to figure out a way. But yeah, you know, the A's are, or not the A's, the Rays are clearly kind of smarter about a lot of these things than anybody else, despite the A's being relatively smart as well.
But I mean, the only reason the Rays are smarter about it is because they've had to do it for 162 games.
I know.
So, of course, they've kind of worked out the kinks, and not it didn't work perfectly the entire time. So,
and I'm sure, you know, in a perfect world, the you know the Rays would love to have Brett Honeywell and a couple other really good starting pitchers.
I think what's going to be really interesting about the next season for them, because they will have a lot of those guys back at full force. So I'm curious to see if they keep playing this game every five games or if they return to a traditional kind of setup. I think it'll be really interesting, especially with you know, not to get too far down this rabbit hole that I can go on forever. You know, they've picked up a couple guys that are going to be interesting in the long term. So
yeah. Yep. They definitely did. And yeah, I mean, there's a guy, you know, like Tyler Glasnow kind of like, fits like the right kind of guy to be like a, not an opener, but like a four inning type guy.
I honestly think they're building towards him being an actual starter, which I think is going to be an interesting experiment.
Yeah, that is interesting. Because he kind of feels like, well, I mean, he pitched really well for you guys, but he kind of has always felt a little bit Daniel Norris-y in that, like, he'll come out and, like, the first two times through the lineup look, you know, just incredible, and then it just all goes to hell. Although that was almost like, that was kind of the way the entire Tigers rotation kind of went this year.
Yeah, there is a lot of that with Glasnow, and it's something that I think that they're focused on, but I think he's an interesting kind of guy.
Yeah. I mean, the third times through the order penalty is real and people are going to be trying to deal with it. So
yeah,
if you don't like bullpenning, I don't know. You have to suck it up. Maybe you could go root for a super traditional team like the Tigers.
Is this where you want to start your conversation about the Tigers way?
Not really. No. But, you know, when we look back at the season, you know, I mean, they're just, it just all feels kind of amorphous. You know, it doesn't feel like they made a lot of progress in any real way. I don't know if maybe you feel differently about this, but
no.
It's just frustrating. You know, you look at like Michael Fulmer, Matt Boyd, you know, none of those guys, Shane Green, took a step forward. Everybody kind of looks, you know, like the same as they did before the season. Like, oh, well, maybe next year, you know, they'll put it together a little bit more. Matt Boyd has that knack for...
The bullpen didn't get significantly worse to me, which I guess counts as a positive.
Yeah, it actually seemed better in the second half. I mean, I guess, you know, they did get Drew Verhagen kind of going finally, and Victor Alcantara was pretty useful. Obviously, Joe Jimenez kind of struggled as he got maybe tired out a little bit, and Green
they
as well.
They overused him, but I think what we saw of Jimenez before those too many innings really kicked in, I think was a very positive sign.
Yeah.
But they definitely leaned on him way too much.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, some of those, you know, in the early part of the season where, you know, those guys were pitching, you know, two out of every three games over and over again, it was just too much. Shane Green getting used, like, in doubleheaders in both games on two different occasions,
I think. I kept waiting for that moment that we've had with Shane Green in the past where something clicks and he just, you know, finds that groove, and it just never happened this season. Like, there was never a point where Shane Green was that guy you're like, yes, that's a guy we're going to get really good trade value from. That's a guy we can lean on. He just never quite got there.
Yeah. There was like a couple weeks in maybe May when it was coming together, but then he hurt his shoulder, you know, or at least had some fatigue and just could never get it going again. And kind of ended up not being any kind of a trade chip of any sort. And of course they just kept running him out there because this is unfortunately what we see from Ron Gardenhire, is he's definitely an old fashioned roles guy, and you know, some of the old fashioned stuff, you know, works, but some of it, you know, we're generally pretty frustrated with. And yeah, I mean, just putting Shane Green out there in closer situations, you know, while his velocity just kept ticking down further and further all September long, was just kind of slowly driving me crazy. It's like, can we try Drew Verhagen? Can we try Jimenez and start, you know, getting him used to that situation? And I mean, he's kind of used to it, but you know, you got to put these guys in a leverage situation and see, you know, kind of how they can handle it under pressure. And they just kind of kept throwing Green out there to get just hit around.
Yeah, I think a lot of that comes down to Rick Anderson too, because I think we saw a lot of any willingness for experimentation just vanish with Chris Bosio. And I'm not bemoaning the loss of Chris Bosio, they did lose something of an interesting experimentation mentality with him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, in a way, Chris Bosio was the guy who kind of sold a lot of us on, like, okay, you know, we're going to mesh the kind of traditional managerial style, but as far as pitching goes, you're going to have, you know, a guy who's got a lot of kind of newfangled concepts. You know, they've got the analytics department, you know, theoretically rolling finally. But yeah, it just didn't really pay any real dividends. Although, I guess, you know, if Drew VerHagen comes out next year and is a good reliever, I guess that's one thing, but... Yeah, you look through the position players, and yeah, nobody really showed out or made any real impact. Jamer Candelario, you know, started good, but...
kind of fell off towards the end. Nico Goodrum was a pleasant surprise for me, only in that I had zero expectation from him, and he was actually kind of good. So, that's really the season in a nutshell, isn't it? It's like, that guy I thought would probably suck didn't suck too bad.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and, you know, and yeah, it's unfortunate because Nico Goodrum does look like he could be a really nice utility piece. He's got power and speed. And if he took another step forward with the bat, he could be useful, you know, long term, especially as a utility man. But he didn't really impress anybody as a guy who you could plug right in at second base and think his defense is going to be solid. So, I mean, he's nice to have around. I'm a big fan. He seems like an awesome person. Did a lot of good for the community, considering yeah. He's basically brand new here and, you know, making league minimum. So, I mean, that was a cool development, but yeah, you know, not a very impactful one. And then you kind of look at, yeah, Candelario, you know, really, you know, the whole second half just kind of kept fading and fading. You know, the power would still show up, but, you know, it basically, this is still his rookie year. So I would caution people on getting too crazy. Like, you know, it's just the way it goes sometimes that, you know, pitchers adjust, teams adjust to you, and then you have to figure it out and adjust back. It's just that,
yeah.
You know, he's got that wrist issue, and you just kind of have to wonder if that thing is going to kind of nag at him for a long time and be a problem. But
well, I hope they take it seriously and that they don't treat it as a minor thing now, that they look at it as being something that could be a really serious issue and work on that now, as opposed to being, you know, something they just kind of leave and see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like you can't just hope for the best is my takeaway. Like you've got to, you know, really address that sort of thing.
Yeah. And it just feels like overall, like the Tigers, you know, in general, were just kind of cautious this year, you know, and they kind of are. There's a lot of like, you know, kind of, you know, there was no radical moves. There were no crazy trades made.
Nope.
You know, they didn't seem particularly aggressive, and you just kind of, you know, it feels again and again like, the, you know, they're kind of just going to let the, you know, the farm system play out before they really even try to do anything. You know, we'll see. I mean, there's been some hints that James McCann, you know, seems unlikely to be back. Al Avila has at least said they have a tough decision there.
Yeah, you don't usually say that. A couple positions that are going to be of high interest to the Tigers in the offseason. Shortstop, which we'll get to, catcher, and I don't know if I remember what the third one was.
Yeah, second base still, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, and it's tough because that's up the middle. Those are, you know, maybe the three most important positions on the field. You know, you can throw center field in there, but...
And for a team that doesn't want to spend a heck of a lot of money... It puts you in a kind of a weird position because it's a pretty light free agent market. And there's not a lot of guys that I think are quite ready yet in the farm. Like I know you and I talked about whether or not Jake Rogers would be ready next season. And I don't know. I mean, I'd like to see him, but I'm not 100% sure he's quite there yet.
Yeah. And you have to be careful. It's true. You don't want to rush these guys too much. You also don't want to kind of slow play them, and you never know. I mean, it's possible Isaac Paredes could force his way up next year as a second baseman late in the season, but you know, the Tigers aren't going to be any hurry to start these guys' service clocks.
No.
So I think you look at, yeah, Paredes and Daz Cameron and Jake Rogers, and if they do come up, it's probably not going to be until September of next year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're still a good ways away. We did start to kind of get a few guys, you know, a few decent prospects coming up. We mentioned Stewart. Hard to say a whole lot about Kristen Stewart other than that, you know, the defense unfortunately looked probably about as bad as advertised, and the bat looked as good as advertised. You know, he drew a lot of walks, looked very patient up there, put together a lot of long at bats, and the power, you know, the power is obvious. It's just a question of how do you survive and not break your pitching staff mentally by having he and Nick out in the corner outfield.
Oh God.
Yeah.
What a nightmare proposition.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's just tough, you know, like there's flaws there, and you know that there are players coming who could help out, but yeah, I mean, it just feels like for the Tigers to really get this thing going on the right track, it's going to take a little bit more than this. And that, I mean, I guess I'll just lead that right into kind of my rant on this, because yeah, I was on the Tigers, our buddies, the Tigers SRD podcast with Chris Brown and Roger Martin yesterday. And we were kind of talking about the Tigers Way article that Chris McCoskey and a few of the other beat writers all kind of jumped on this week, because, you know, the Tigers gave some comments about this again, and they, you know, they've been mentioning the Tigers Way all along, but, you know, I kind of, you know, Chris McCoskey wrote this article for the Detroit News. I like Chris McCoskey. I don't have any particular beef with Chris McCoskey, but when you write another Tigers Way article and really are kind of selling it like the Tigers are, you know, really dedicated on improving the fundamentals, and you know, they're really going to make sure in the minor leagues that we come down on guys. If, you know, I saw there was a quote in one of those articles from Dave Littlefield, who's vice president of player development, talking about, yeah, you know, maybe we do need to start, you know, kind of sitting guys down when they don't run out a ground ball, or when they don't run out a fly ball, or when they miss the cutoff man, and kind of make these fundamental errors. And you know, it's just kind of like, well, what have you been doing all along? Because as I pointed out to Chris McCoskey, you know, the first Tigers Way articles were written all the way back in 2015. And, you know, the Tigers were talking about, you know, creating like a, you know, kind of a almost a code of conduct and a way to play the game throughout the minor league system where everyone would know what the fundamentals, you know, that the Tigers demanded were, you know, that there were standards kind of in place for how you would do all these different things. And, you know, we're 4 years on, and I didn't actually worry that much about their fundamentals necessarily. I mean, 9 times out of 10, it's just that you're just not that good a player. And we know the Tigers are still waiting on their better prospects. But you know, the Tigers kind of brought it up themselves. Like, we've got to work harder about this. Ron Gardenhire, you know, was talking about how some of the young players would come up and didn't seem particularly ready to him. And that's all well and good. But, you know, you can't come out and promote this as, like, this huge, you know, change in Tigers philosophy when we have these articles going all the way back to 2014. And so I retweeted, you know, kind of, I retweeted Chris and was pretty snarky, like, oh, here comes the obligatory, you know, we're going to improve the fundamentals, you know, big time this offseason, and we're really, really digging into that. And he came right back at me with, like, no, you are so wrong about this. And, you know, they're just going to have to prove it, because, you know, a lot of those articles really felt like they were just carrying the Tigers water here, you know, like, oh, there's,
yeah.
You know, things have really changed.
It's kind of hard to write something like that without making it sound like you're totally just kissing the team's ass, frankly.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you got to question them on some of these things, and, you know, it was just funny to immediately, you know, within seconds, I had pulled up Chris McCoskey's original Tigers Way article from 2015, which, you know, 4 years on, and in that article, Al Avila was kind of talking about it, you know, in the exact same terms he was the other day, and also hilariously to me said something about how, you know, he didn't want to bring this up. You know, he didn't want, this wasn't going to be a thing that the Tigers talked about. You know, it was going to be more than a manual. It was going to be a way of doing business and teaching players, but it was going to be something that they were going to kind of keep under the radar. And it was just something they were going to do. You know, it wasn't something they were going to promote and make a big fuss about. And yet every damn year we get another, you know, slew of these articles when the season ends that, you know, we're really going to lock down on all this. And, you know, I don't really care, because, you know, at the end of the day, the fundamentals are important, but that's not why the Tigers are bad. The Tigers are bad because they don't have legit, talented major league players to the degree that you need. But it was just, you know, it was just kind of another ugly sort of PR issue, really, more than anything. And yeah, I mean, I just can't take this anymore.
It's just going to make you crazy.
Yeah, you know, don't tell us these things, you know, just do it. You know, if you're going to do it, do it.
Yeah, like, really, like, don't advertise it. Just make it the thing.
Yeah, when, you know, when you're doing it right, other people will write it about you, you know, from the outside. You won't even need to, like, go around, you know, subtly talking about it. Like, oh, you know, well, we don't want to make a big deal about this. We're just going to mention it every damn offseason and get all the beat writers to write an article about it.
Yeah, and come up with, like, a quippy name for it. Like, come on.
I know. And just kind of jump it on, like, the Cardinals Way, you know, etc.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine. Like, you know, these things make sense, you know, to do. I mean, you do want kind of, you know, like a uniform you know, way of teaching and, you know, uniform kind of expectations throughout the minor league system.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that all makes sense. It's just that, you know, you keep bringing it up every year, and we're going to eventually, you know, have a little bit of, what's it called when the stimulus stops working? Stimulus extension?
Maybe. Or yeah. Just Tiger's Way Ennui.
Yeah, Tiger's Way Ennui. I like that. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know, that whole thing just kind of, like, put me off my feed for a couple of days. I was just like, oh, here we go with the Tigers Way push again. But, you know, the Tigers did some cool things, I thought, this offseason on that, or this past season on that front. They're doing, you know, the Instructional League is going on right now. And I like that they had Manning and Burroughs come and throw for Rick Anderson and Ron Gardenhire and kind of get some feedback. Because you do need all the coaches, you know, to be on sort of the same page and be able to make some suggestions. So that's all well and good. Yeah.
Yeah, not a total shit show. Some positive stuff.
Yeah. It's just another thing like the analytics database where it just feels like, you know, they started talking about all these things the minute Al Avila took over, and, you know, 3-4 years on, you know, hopefully they're starting to come to fruition, but you just don't know. Like, are we already, you know, kind of further behind than they were when they started at this point? Because some of these things have just, you know, taken kind of a long time. And I keep remembering, you know, that Nick Castellanos, maybe this was like 2015, his second year, but he was talking about the Tigers farm system and his, you know, his years coming through it, and how at each level he went to, it felt like he got like completely different instruction, and they would try to change his swing, you know, and it just happened to him, you know, year after year, where people would kind of start tweaking and experimenting with him, and there was no sort of unified plan for how to get him, you know, to the best point possible. And that just seemed like the most Tigers thing ever, where it was just sort of this laissez-faire, like, well, we'll just let, you know, the managers
let the next guy sort your problems out, let the next level figure that out.
Yeah, and just letting all these sort of different methodologies just sort of have their day to just, you know, play with, you know, the guy who is, you know, the best prospect that you had, you know, over a course of like 5 years. So yeah, that doesn't feel super great. And no. I pointed this out on the other show last night where that, you know, I read The Cubs Way by Tom Verducci, Sports Illustrated writer. And it was all about, you know, Theo Epstein and company taking over the Cubs and turning them into a World Series champion in like 5 years. But the first thing that happened is that they came into an organization that was super backwards. And, the, you know, the Cubs still had like, you know, like 3x5 cards, you know, filed everywhere. And that was how they did their scouting reports. And the Yeah. And there was no analytics database, you know, there was none of that. And, you know, there was different terminology and like scouting grade methodology and all these different things. And the very first thing they did the first year was get an entire analytics database built, get all the scouts, you know, up to speed on how to report and use the computer to actually file their reports. So all this can be put together. Get all the scouts using the same terminology and the same, you know, scouting grades and kind of, you know, what metrics they wanted to see emphasize, all that stuff. They got all that done in like 1 year. And it's because they outsourced quite a bit of it. You know, they outsourced, you know, a complete analytics database to be built. And, you know, the Tigers, meanwhile, took, you know, 3 years, almost 4 years to get, you know, the Caesar thing up and running. And yeah, you just, you know, it just feels like we're, you know, forever kind of saying the right things and taking way longer than everybody else would to kind of get this done. So, I mean, obviously the Cubs are, you know, Theo Epstein and those guys had a lot of experience that, you know, that kind of the Tigers front office doesn't have coming from Boston. But you know, they involved outside people and made this thing happen, whereas the Tigers continue to feel like this insular community that is now kind of grafted on the Gardenhire lineage of the, you know, 05 to 2012 Twins for whatever reason. Who never won anything.
it sort of feels like we're at that point where, like, in the 70s where cars got seatbelts. And the Tigers are like, no, my 72 Chevelle is fine. I'm just going to keep driving it until it falls apart. Meanwhile, everyone else is like, I've got windshield wipers. I have passenger seatbelts. And they're like, no, we'll get there eventually. It's fine. We just got to, like, make sure that we put somebody through the window first.
Yeah. Yeah. The Tigers, like, are the guy who were like, you know, who always says, like, hey, I'd rather just be thrown clear. Like, that. The Tigers are that,
like,
guy.
They're the guys that are like, well, I know there's a better way to do this, but we're fine with what we've got for the time being. And it's like, maybe it's time that you get the seatbelts, you know, like.
Maybe everybody else who's doing things and being more successful than you actually does know some things, and perhaps you should try hiring some of them and putting them into positions of power rather than the dudes that you've had for 20 years.
There's only so much you can like rely on the fact that you had four straight postseason runs because you're not there anymore. Like, that door is closed.
Yep. And not only did you, you know, kind of mortgage everything you had to get those 4 years, you mortgaged a lot of what's gone on since, because they, you know, they were way behind in analytics. They were behind in terms of their scouting and the way they teach the game and their facilities. And they're doing things to catch up. I mean, you know, we've talked about, you know, okay, they have, you know, they have chefs now. They got all the stadiums wired for TrackMan.
Yeah, Lakeland looks great. They really, really went all out on that.
They kind of leaned on, you know, the group that owns, I think it's a group that owns the Erie Seawolves, and they're replacing UPMC Park's, you know, entire field this offseason to upgrade the facilities there. And the Tigers have like a mental skills coach now. You know, yeah, you know, and they're on the right track with all those things. It just feels like it's taking bloody long to get it all kind of coming together. And we still haven't seen any, you know, kind of payoff yet. That's for sure.
And it's going to be a while before we do.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right on that front.
Excuse me, like I just choked on the idea of how long it's going to take.
Yeah, it's true. The Tigers way, okay, all well and good, but, you know, everybody's just going to have to forgive me for just kind of rolling my eyes and kind of, yeah, like, okay. The Tigers way, yes, indeed. Good luck with all that.
I do love how quickly McCoskey gets on the defensive about anyone who, like, disagrees with his take on things.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, being a beat writer does kind of suck in that frame because, you know, you just catch it. You catch hell from everybody, and nobody ever thinks to themselves, like, okay, this is a guy who actually has to go talk to the players, and, you know, if he wrote something critical about the organization, has to hear it from them. You know, that's not easy, but, and we're in a time where people don't value that kind of journalism anyway. They just complain about the lack of it. And don't pay for good journalism. And we've talked about that on the show before. But he was a little bit defensive on this. And, I mean, I kind of came right at him immediately. So maybe that was part of it. Just like, oh, here we go with the Tigers way rollout, part four. We're going to have to see how it goes. You know, the Tigers have said the right things, you know, in a lot of cases. And they seem to be doing some of the right things. But, we're just going to have to see if it bears any fruit through the farm system. And whether or not someone hits the right cutoff man is probably bigger kind of deciding points as to whether we turn these things around anytime soon. I'm all right. So I had my little fun and got annoyed about the Tigers way business, but we did get a little bit of news that kind of points towards some of the offseason issues, which was, like we mentioned earlier, that Alavila kind of mentioned that, you know, they weren't real sure. It sounds like they were not real sure what they're going to do with James McCann, which... You know,
bye, Felicia.
Yeah, which kind of sounds like bye, Felicia. Because, you know, it's not like they have to offer him a contract. I mean, you know, he's going into his first year arbitration. He's theirs. So, you know, if you're actually really kind of mentioning publicly that you have this decision in front of you, it doesn't sound like he's coming.
No, and I have no problems with that. I don't feel like he offers the team anything so substantial. I'd rather we stretch out Grenier a little bit more. If Hicks is healed, give him some more reps. There's a lot you can do without having to lean on bringing Rogers up right away. There's going to even be guys on the free market that aren't going to be too expensive. We're looking at some of the guys that are a bit older, but you got guys like Weeders out there that are going to be free agents. You could spend a little money there on an older guy to kind of guide the new crop.
Yeah, I'd like to see him do that, but I don't know.
Because I don't think McCann's going to be the guy that's going to be available to those guys to kind of give them that right mental direction. I think he's still too young for that and still too unseasoned, and I don't think he's a good enough catcher to be the guy. Like, I would love, obviously, to have Alex Avila back to be that guy, but he's still got another year with the Diamondbacks. But I think as, like, an elder statesman kind of catcher, that's exactly the kind of guy you want.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the big free agent is going to be Yasmani Grandal, and as much as I'd love to get Yasmani Grandal, that, you know, he has no reason to come to Detroit, even if we overpaid.
Wilson Ramos is going to be a free agent. There's a lot of guys that I would love to see, but have no motivation to spend the latter part of their careers in Detroit. Especially this kind of a downswing.
There's like Martin Maldonado, there's Jonathan Lucroy, and then maybe the best idea is Jeff Mathis, who, you know, catches for the Diamondbacks, can't hit a lick. which is very similar to McCann, but is generally regarded as, you know, by every coach who's ever worked with him as one of the best defensive catchers, you know, sort of the Brad Ausmus of his day. Like, this guy can't hit, but he's so valuable in the way that he receives the ball and the way he calls the game and the way he controls
things on
the field.
Yeah, that's exactly
the
kind of guy I want them to pick up. Pick up a guy who is a catcher. Don't pick up a guy because of his bat. Who cares? I know that in the long term, in a real season, that's exactly the kind of guy you'd want, is a guy who can hit and a guy who can call games. But I don't really care how many games we win next year, frankly. I want a guy in there who's going to give the right guidance to the guys that are going to be there when they're actually in contention.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it really feels like what they should be doing is kind of setting up like a nice framework with a couple veterans in key places, so that as, you know, the young players start coming in, and, you know, you just never know who we might see next year. Maybe we will see Daz Cameron. Maybe we'll see Jacob Rogers. Maybe we'll see Victor Reyes come back from Toledo, where I assume he'll start. Maybe we'll see Isaac Paredes. Maybe we'll see some of the big pitchers. Maybe Bo Burrows makes an appearance, or, you know, someone along those lines. But if you have the framework in place to support those guys when they come in, it's a lot better to me than just kind of putting all these rookies onto the same team with a bunch of other kind of, you know, non-prospect guys who are in their mid-20s and never really made it, and just kind of expecting them to kind of figure it out and get better. You know, it's going to take too long. Yeah. It's going to take a long time. And who was it? I think it was Paul Wesner, who writes for Tigstown. I think maybe he's their managing editor over there, but he was kind of talking about the Tigers' attendance, which we could mention, but the Tigers' attendance obviously was down a good deal. I think it was like 6 or 7% from last year.
It was a pretty steep drop. I think it was, I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was definitely a fair drop from where we've been in years past. That's for sure. But I mean, baseball attendance overall dropped 4%. It's the first season in a long time that they've had less than 70 million in attendance.
Yep.
Or 7 million if you're a really stupid blog that can't figure out numbers. God, I was so annoyed with how long it took them to correct that. Because you're looking at it going 7 million people. Like, it can't be 7 million people. More than 10 million people alone went to the top three stadiums. So, like, I can do math. Can you? But anyway, I get feisty about stuff like that, but that's probably the editor in me rearing her ugly head. I don't know. It was a drop, but a lot of stadiums dropped. And part of that we recognize is that they're counting attendance differently. I believe rather than counting tickets sold, a lot of stadiums are counting how many tickets are checked. So the actual people in through the door is now what we're looking at as attendance. And I know stadiums, especially like Miami, really manipulated that, where they would do a lot of giveaways and there would be a lot of tickets in circulation, but not a lot of tickets actually being used. And they saw they were the only team, I think, on that list that had sub 1 million attendance.
Yeah,
for the whole year. And that was a drop. Yeah.
I was just going to say, and yeah, that, I mean, I think they, man, I wish I could remember this number, but they accounted for a pretty substantial portion of the drop. You know, and when you trade your entire outfield and all three of them turn out to be, you know, are really good players, and, you know, you basically like cash in all your chips and say, hey, we're going to suck. Yeah.
And then,
that's,
you know,
gonna happen.
Christian Yelich goes on to become the NL MVP and, you know, so on and so forth.
Yep. Sorry, Marlins fans. That whole thing kind of had to suck. And, you know, maybe, you know, it's possible that too many teams, maybe not too many teams tanking, but too many teams like making very clear that they were tanking, you know, kind of hurt that. Maybe, you know, maybe it was a bad weather year. I hate to make too much about 1 year of attendance, but the Tigers' attendance is.
I find it funny that we talk about tanking, and we talk about these teams that really came under fire for quote unquote tanking. And two of those teams were the Rays and the A's.
Yeah.
And the Rays ended their year with a 90 win season. And yeah, their attendance did actually drop from last year, but not substantially. They actually rose in the rankings of where they were from last year to, I think, they're third last now or second last. You know, I like to pick apart these things. And the A's, who were in it until yesterday.
Yeah. Well, and it was always weird to me from the beginning that, you know, people were talking about the Rays as like a tanking team. Like, you know, the Rays did what they always do. Like, they don't spend very much money and they're super creative and innovative in how they go about things.
They're cheap. They guard their farm, and they make really weird decisions with guys that have been there for a long time.
Yeah, they really do kind of put their emotions aside because they have to, and you know, and go and just keep kind of trying to turn things into better value.
Yeah, I think you could argue that the Rays are one of the least romantic teams in how they deal with things.
Yeah.
And yet somehow consistently manage to churn out one of the most entertaining teams on the field.
Yeah, and their team is the least, you know, sort of romantic, or the stadium is like the least romantic place in baseball as well, and yet...
How dare you? There is a Ray touch tank there.
I will give them that. I do like the tank, but it is kind of funny that the Rays, like, you know, really... You know, want to get on about
and
yeah.
the morality of it anyway. I could fall. I'm so sorry to everybody listening. I could go on.
We've got a few baseball writers we probably like to call out, but we will not. We will pass on that.
No,
but,
and you know what? That bothers me because I did see a lot of that. There were some folks out there that were really shitty about the Rays when the season kicked off. Some specific writers. It does not take a lot of figuring out to figure out who they were. But there are people now that are like really on their case. Like, yeah, I showed you. And like, what were you out there playing? You were not. Calm down. Yes, they made some assessments based on the beginning of the season. But like, they're humans. Calm down.
Yeah.
Like, well, you need to drag them through the mud from saying something stupid.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, like that's all about their ownership. And I mean, you have to separate, be able to separate these out into their component parts. The Rays front office are freaking brilliant. And their players play their butts off of. So, you know, if their owner is kind of a deadbeat, which that's how I'd portray him, and doesn't want to, you know, shell in for an extra, you know, kind of top tier player or two to kind of, you know, get them over the top, you know, that's his business. But it is still, you know, rather impressive the way they were able to put this together.
They always make the most out of what they have. I feel like the Tigers could learn something from this.
Yeah, the Tigers are kind of one of the classic, like, least efficient ones, you know, like giving out, like, legacy contracts to people. And, you know, hiring all their old buddies, you know, who've been in the game since, you know, like their late 70s and stuff. And, you know, and at the same time, try to talk a good game about how they're, you know, going to be super forward thinking and, you know, and do all these things. It's just, yeah. It's hard to square those perspectives.
And I think there is something in that where they really could work on being a little less romantic about things. Like, we bemoan the Victor Martinez contract, and we've complained about it for years. And honest to God, the only reason it exists because Victor Martinez went up to Mike Ilitch and was like, Mike, I'd like to stay. Will you give me more money? And poor Mike, who just so badly wanted a happy team winning a World Series, was like, yeah. And
I'm going to take care of you, Victor. We're going to take care of you. Well, they took good care of him. It's that sense of family.
Right? And we're already seeing a little less of that. We're seeing that Alavila was willing to trade Justin Verlander if Verlander was willing to go. You know, I think we could just use a little bit more of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're going to have to because, you know, nobody pays you for being nice, you know, for very long. And nice doesn't generally translate into wins. I mean, there's always that argument about whether or not the Tigers are right to be a little bit better to their free agents and a little bit, you know, willing to overpay and to kind of be deferential to the veterans because Detroit isn't really that much of a free agent destination, but it's very hard to see how that ever helped them, you know? I mean, I'm glad that the Tigers kind of tend to do things in a fairly classy fashion on that front for the most part, especially after kind of like the first, you know, early part of the Ilitch, you know, family ownership where they kind of were bad about that. They weren't, you know, they were pretty cold to Sparky and, you know, fired Ernie Harwell, like kind of without really realizing that everyone was going to riot. You know, they figured that out eventually and, you know, hopefully they'll be able to carry that over, but with more balance. But to actually get back to Mr. Wesner's comment about, you know, what the problem is with the Tigers declining ownership, because he's, you know, or declining attendance, because that really crystallized something for me, because I know I'm the guy who keeps saying, you know, the Tigers need to make some trades. The Tigers need to sign a few guys, especially like, everybody else is sort of, you know, maybe a little bit more like, you know, sanguine about like, okay, until the farm system kind of starts producing more guys, there's really no point. But I really worry about the Tigers letting this get away from them. to the point that attendance, you know, drops for like another year or two, and you start to get to the point where you've lost people. You know, like Detroit is a really good baseball town, and you know, a couple of years could go on where they were 500, and as soon as they're good again, everybody will be 100% behind them. But if you wait too long, it just gets harder and harder. And we saw, you know, the Royals, who obviously don't have as much money to spend, kind of be in this morass for, you know, 20 years where, you know, even when they did get a couple talented players, they could never sort of parlay it into a complete roster because they've let themselves fall so far. And it's just really hard to push yourself over the top from there, which is why I would really like to see the Tigers, try to be a 500 team next year. I know they won't be, but I would like to see them kind of have a goal of like, okay, it's time to start, you know, kind of building this thing back up. Because once you're a 500 team, you're sort of on that plateau where it's like, okay, a couple key pieces, maybe, you know, somebody breaks out, something good happens here or there, and there you go, you're a wild card team. And you're not, you know, so far from being able to like, okay, we're going to make a trade for a star like Christian Yelich or Giancarlo Stanton and take this thing to the next level. But yeah, if they just kind of keep letting it go, and you know, we've got Miguel Cabrera's contract, they've got Jordan Zimmermann's contract, and those are going to be kind of, you know, albatrosses around their neck for a little while longer. But yeah, I mean, man, you let this go too long where the Tigers are bad for a long time, and you know, maybe one or two of the couple position player prospects we're looking for don't pan out, and the next thing you know you've basically got a lost decade. Tigers haven't been to the postseason since 2014. It's already been a while. So yeah, overall, I don't know. That's my real concern, and that's why I kind of keep kind of pushing them to make sure they have a couple veterans. Like, we're losing Victor Martinez this year. You know, they like to talk about the veteran leadership he provided. Well, okay, find me a veteran catcher, and you know, find me at least one middle infielder who is competent. Yeah. So, and that leads us to the middle infielder topic, because as we saw on Instagram the other day, Jose Iglesias basically bid goodbye to Tigers fans and said sort of thank you for his, you know, 4.5 seasons of time here. I don't know if I'm really prepared to like go all the way through the Jose Iglesias legacy in Detroit, or if there is such a thing. But what did that make you think seeing him say that? Do you think there's any chance the Tigers would still end up bringing him back? Do you think that he'll find kind of a team that's a little bit more exciting and has a better chance to win that will actually want him?
I don't know. I feel like they could have been smart, and I think that they could do a lot worse than to keep him for another year. We definitely had this discussion, I think, where I think he's a quality enough player for the team that they have, that it makes sense to go with someone like that, because you're not going to get anybody who's better, per se. And I think what may have happened is that I think he may have decided he wanted to try the waters elsewhere. Because I think in any kind of version of it I look at, the Tigers know that he's kind of the best they can do. And he could probably be had pretty cheaply. And so I have to think that Iglesias is thinking, do I want to finish my career with a team that's struggling to get back to something? Or do I want to try my luck somewhere else?
Yeah. Even if that means kind of having to be, you know, maybe kind of more of a role player. Because, you know, it feels like, I'm pretty sure about this, the Tigers kind of have been trying to trade Jose Iglesias, you know, since, you know, the deadline last year. And no one really seems to want to give up very much. And it's just kind of hard. You take a look at the teams that are good right now and who is probably going to be good next year. And there really isn't anybody who needs a shortstop. I mean, maybe the Phillies a little bit. I mean, there's a couple teams who could use him, but it really feels like it's kind of a backup role. That's really the only thing available to him. And, I mean, I don't know. I think he might be kind of disappointed out there, but I think, it's a good point to suggest that maybe he's just kind of done here as well. Based on a few conversations I've had with people who may know, although you can't always be sure about it, it also feels like the Tigers just aren't, you know, just aren't real keen on Jose Iglesias, you know, for whatever reason. It's kind of hard to imagine that, you know, he's causing a ruckus in the clubhouse, or that he's sort of a
problem
child.
Yeah, it's really hard
to
see Iglesias as a clubhouse cancer, but, you know, what do I know? I'm not in that clubhouse every day. To me, he seems like the kind of guy you kind of want around, like quiet, under the radar, seems like a good guy to have on the field.
Yeah.
But
kind of fun, energetic kid.
Really good at turning those double plays. Like, I mean, he's a hell of a fun guy to watch. When he's at peak health, he is a solid shortstop.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, when I watch Javi Baez, I think like, okay, you know, that Jose Iglesias might be the only guy who can make those plays other than Javi Baez. Like, you know, that's the level of shortstop. Andrelton Simmons is an amazing shortstop and probably the best in the game, but he just has a different style. Like, it's not the speedy, like, incredible hands and acrobatics.
It's not that showy, flashy, you know, there's something really elegant about the way that Jose Iglesias can turn a double play. Like, that just makes you look at it and go, like, what did I just see?
Yep. Yep. Just those little freak moments where he pitches the ball out of his glove or, yeah, does something crazy. The tags. That's another fun thing with Javi Baez, because, you know, Javi Baez is kind of the tag master. That's kind of how, you know, he's often portrayed. But, man, Jose Iglesias can match him in that. And there just aren't too many guys like those two who can, you know, be in the air, you know, acrobatically, like, flipping and still, like, land, you know, this catch and tag immediately. You know, it's, he's been a lot of fun to have. You know, he was one of the first players of this kind of era that I finally thought, like, you know, I might actually get a jersey, but I never did. But he was that fun to watch.
He was a really, I mean, he's been great for the Tigers. I think all in all, a pretty underrated player. Like, he's not the kind of guy that I think you see a lot of jerseys out there, but when healthy, is such a consistent guy to have on the field. And he's not an exciting guy at the plate, but he's also really weirdly reliable there.
Like, yeah, he's not going to produce a lot, but he'll always produce something. You know, he's never like cratered completely as an offensive player.
He's a hard guy to strike out, so he's an interesting kind of, I don't know, there's an interesting player there. Like, not a lot of flash, but definitely something special.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe that's maybe it's just kind of driven the Tigers crazy that a guy who doesn't strike out and, you know, has the hands he does, they just cannot get him to kind of have an approach at the plate. And he's just always just sort of up there, you know, without a thought in his head, just swinging at whatever. Maybe that's just finally driven him crazy. But yeah, I mean, you look what's out there, and it's like Adany Echevarria or Freddie Galvis, and they're both a little bit like slightly lesser versions of Jose Iglesias. So
yeah, and I mean, I wouldn't mind Hetch if you're going to go out and get someone, but like
I want somebody.
You need somebody. You need an established shortstop in that role. So to me, keeping Iglesias was the most sensible decision. But I mean, if you've got to do something, a guy like Hetch is a pretty good guy to get.
And, you know, I don't know, maybe the Tigers can find someone who can hit a little bit more and isn't really like a true shortstop, but is good enough. But I just really feel like, you know, with all the young pitching coming up and trying to kind of at least play like strong fundamental baseball, because you don't have the power and the bats to really win that way, you should try to win with, you know, as much as you can and support your pitching staff with defense. And, you know, get rid of Jose Iglesias doesn't really make any sense on that front, and we don't really have a second baseman either. And so you look at Nick Castellanos and Christian Stewart in the corners, Miggy and Jamer Candelario, neither of which is really a plus defender at the corner infields, and then you have nobody in the middle, and your catching sucks.
So, yeah.
Are we making progress, Tigers?
You're not going to win it defensively, and you can't do much defensively, so what do you have?
Yeah, and I mean, that's a question they've got to answer. I mean, you can't just, like, you know, throw Dawel Lugo and Ronnie Rodriguez and Nico Goodrum out there in the middle infield next year and not expect us all to just riot, because we should riot. Like, that's some nonsense, you know? It's, you got to have a plan here.
They've got to pick some guys up. I don't think that they have any other options. Like, they've got to at least kind of test that free agency market, get a couple guys that are going to be cheap. I think last year they really focused on veteran pitching with Liriano, with Fires. I think this year they got to start kind of looking at the idea of maybe a couple veteran position players, and I think that would be really smart for them.
Yeah, and they probably still should get, you know, another veteran starter, or try to get a guy like Patrick Corbin and see if maybe his rebound is real, or find someone like that. And I really would kind of like to see them. We'll probably at some point later on, once the postseason's over and we actually start getting closer to like Rule 5 draft and winter meetings, we'll probably start talking about who's going to be gone and what the Tigers should do. But yeah, I mean, I'd kind of like to see, you know, them try to find a better reliever as well. Like, if you overspend a little bit for a reliever and are able to trade him for a good prospect, that's still like more efficient spending than giving a second round pick, you know, $3 million or whatever. So yeah, so we'll see what they do there. You know, the Tigers payroll this year was as of opening day, Percot's contracts was $125 million, which was down from where it ended in 2017 at $207 million. So that's, what is that, $82 million they've saved, and they're going to have Victor Martinez coming off the books and only a couple guys hitting arbitration. So, yeah, okay, you have Miguel Cabrera's contract. That's kind of a problem. And Zimmerman, you still got another 2 years of that. But there's plenty of payroll space available there where they should be able to spend $30, $40 million, or even less than that if they're slick about it. Maybe there's a trade to make. You kind of have to look at the farm system and smart teams tend to figure out, like, okay, we're keeping these guys. These guys are off limits. These other guys, if we can upgrade two or three of them into a major league player, we'll do that because...
Yeah.
At the end of the day, minor league players aren't worth what major league players are.
They aren't, and all minor league players are a gamble, right? You're counting on, you're buying a dozen eggs, and you're hoping two of them aren't cracked by the time you get home.
Yeah.
You know? So, I think you got to assess that, and you pick the two that you really want to coddle, and then you kind of play around with the rest.
Yep. I mean, Christian Yelich, I had a feeling was going to have a really big year, and he's been kind of lucky. Like, we talked last night on the other podcast about some of his stats where he has, a 35% home runs per fly ball rate, which is just stupid. And that won't sustain, but it was pretty, predictable that, they were getting kind of a steal there. Lewis Brinson wasn't an amazing prospect, and, Tigers could have got him, and, some of those opportunities may come up again. So, yeah, hopefully they keep an eye out if there's, another team that's going to sell off. We're watching the Orioles just finally, accept reality and just totally melt down. There isn't a whole lot I really want to poach there, but... Yeah, finding teams like that and trying to take advantage a little bit with some of the depth pieces in the farm system just seems like something they should be trying to do, because you're not going to get there by just building a farm system by itself. So,
yeah, gotta play the short game and the long game.
Yeah, you gotta play the free agent game. You gotta play the development game, the farm system game, the trading game. You have to do all those things well. AJ Preller, I saw someone saying that Padres GM AJ Preller was, real close to being considered the best general manager in the game. And I mean, that just tells you where fans have gone, that a guy who's the general manager of a team that, hasn't won. I don't even know how long it's been since they were 500. I mean, they're garbage every year, but their farm system is excellent. And people are just totally buying into it. They have, one of the best farm systems in the game, so they're going to be awesome. And it just doesn't work like that, This is the same people who paid Eric Hosmer $120 million.
Oh, my God, I'm still mad about that, and I don't even like the Padres.
I know, I don't care. Do what you want to do, Padres, but...
I'm so prepared to be outraged this season over how much Bryce Harper and Manny Machado end up making somewhere.
Yeah, I might be outraged at how little, too. I have no idea what's going to happen after some of the crazy things that happened last offseason. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, but man, at least one of those guys is going to make bank, and it's going to be disgusting. Because they're so young. Like, you really look at it, and they still have so much potential time ahead of them that someone is going to bank on those guys being worth, a 6-year contract somewhere.
Yeah, and that's insane. And with those guys, I don't even know. You might have to go 10 years and, $32 million a year. I don't know. They might be the guys who kind of get that monster contract that we just haven't really seen in a while. That kind of plays into one of the... We're trying to mix the listener questions in. I didn't really want to just do a whole segment, but we did have a question on Nicholas Castellanos, which kind of goes to that. Nick is only a year from free agency. So should the Tigers keep him and even try to extend his contract? And who could be a realistic suitor in case, there is a trade possibility?
I'm 100% of the opinion that we should extend Nick Castellanos immediately. I'm weird about this, right? But I think he offers a lot to the team beyond just his bat prowess. And no, I'm not talking about his fielding skills, because they're nil. But I think he's the kind of guy that team needs to have around in this interim period. I think that he's a really important character to the development of the team as a cohesive unit, if that makes sense. I think that that's exactly the man you need in the clubhouse going forward. And I think that's got its own value beyond just him being the best batter on the team.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you know, it is sort of that lineage type argument where Nick is, you know, is only, what, 26, and yet he's got, you know, 5 years of major league experience. He's seen a lot. He might still get better with the bat, and he's kind of the one who's sort of seen it, you know, from the peak all the way down to where it is. And, you know, it just depends on what he wants, I guess. The hard part is just figuring out how to fit he and Kristen Stewart and Miguel Cabrera, all three on the same roster, when ideally you'd like all three of them to be DHing most of the time. And, you know, there are ways to do this. I mean, you can kind of, like we've talked before, and, you know, you can probably anticipate that Miguel Cabrera is going to be injured for half the season. So at that point, you're going to have plenty of DH, you know, plate appearances to give to Nick or Kristen so that you don't have them both out there at the same time. And when you look at the Tigers system, you know, there's a couple good players and they're at key positions. There's a couple prospects I really like, and you've got a second baseman. You maybe have a shortstop. I don't know so much about that one, but you have a center fielder in Daz Cameron. You've got the catcher coming in Jake Rogers. What you don't have are those big impact bats. And so, yeah, I would like to see them still extend Nick. It's just a question of, you know, how reasonable he's going to be about that. And
yeah,
I don't know. It's just tricky. Doesn't seem like very many guys, excuse me, sign an extension a year from free agency. And especially considering kind of the labor strife that's gone on and the fact that Nick is the union representative, it feels like there might be some pressure on him not to do that. And that's okay too. I mean, if you play Nick Castellanos out next year and then you want to give him a qualifying offer and let him walk, or if you want to sign him, you know, there are options, you know, down the road as well. But yeah, I mean, they can't really afford to lose a guy who's, you know, a 300 hitter who's probably going to hit, you know, 30 home runs, I would imagine, over the next, you know, a year, over the next 5 years. Because Nick is just same base gauge as Christian Yelich. And, you know, I've kind of always compared the two of them together because they both have hit a lot of line drives and are sort of like similar style of hitter, at least, although Yelich has better patience. But, you know, there's still that chance that Nick, you know, could be a 30, 35 home run guy. Yeah. And he's going to hit for high average, and man, we don't have a lot of guys like that in the farm system. So, yeah, I'm kind of on board with trying to keep him around.
Yeah, I think it's a good call. I don't know that they're going to be able to work that out, but I think if they can, they should.
Yeah, I mean, really, as long as you're not paying him until he's like beyond 31, 32 years old, I'm fine giving him, you know, 10, 12 million a year. I don't know. If they have to go a little bit farther than that, I might kind of rethink it. But yeah, it's just really hard to see how they're going to have enough offense at any point in the near future. I mean, maybe you let Nick walk, do the qualifying offer, collect your pick, and then you sign somebody who's just more well-rounded and to play right field for you. Or maybe Jacob Robson kind of surprises you and works out. But yeah, I don't know. That's definitely going to be a key question. Yeah, it's just hard to let him go when we need offense. So let's see. Jaja Bojangles asked, this is kind of a complex one too. How do you think the Tigers bullpen is going to shake out next year? What pieces, if any, should they add? This is the equivalent of like 10 articles that we're going to cover in about
yeah,
5 minutes.
Yeah, I imagine we'll get way deeper into this on the actual site when we start going. I don't know that next year is the year that the bullpen's going to get any good, but like we talked about, I think we're going to see, I would like to see them make at least a move to add somebody.
Yeah, same here. I mean, if I look at like who they have right now, I mean, you've got Green, you've got Jimenez, you've got, let's see, I guess, I still don't know if you have Daniel Stump or not. I kind of say not. I'd kind of prefer to see Hardy take that role and then try to find a better lefty. But then you've got Verhagen, and that's kind of it. You know, there's plenty of options. You know, Victor Alcantara pitched well. I'm still a little suspicious, but if he comes out and pitches well next year, fine, you've got him. You've got Zach Houston, who was Toledo's closer for most of the latter half of the season, and a little more than that, and he was good. We've got Brian Garcia and Jason Foley, who are both really nice young relief arms who are coming back from Tommy John surgery, and at some point next year, hopefully, they'll be ready. You could also consider putting Spencer Turnbull into the bullpen because he kind of has a tendency. We've kind of thought he would end up a reliever for a long time because he has really good stuff, but he'll also sort of lose his command, you know, over the course of a start, and kind of seems like he loses focus sometimes. Like, he'll come out in the first inning all amped out and be throwing 97 and just blowing people away. And then the next inning, the velocity's down like a couple miles an hour back to like starter velocity. And then sometimes he starts getting hit around. So he's a guy who I would imagine the Tigers will kind of consider their sixth starter next year. And we'll they'll find plenty of starts for him, but there's still a chance he might end up in a bullpen role as well. So I would like to see the Tigers let Alex Wilson go. I like Alex Wilson. He, you know, the dude is a warrior. Like, some of the injuries he's played through the past like couple of years have just been stupid. I mean, he's just a super tough cat. But and you do kind of like having like that gritty veteran guy down in the bullpen to kind of hang with those guys and show them the ropes. But you can find someone, I think, on the free agent market who's better than Alex Wilson and can kind of fill that same role and hopefully be a trade chip. And yeah, I'd like to see them do that as well. So those are kind of my beginning thoughts anyway, before we get too deep into it.
Nope, I'm agreeing. I'm not going to fight you on any of that.
Jacob Markle, one of our prospect writers. Oh yeah, ask me about prospects like he's not sitting there all smug thinking he knows all the answers already. Which new prospect not named Casey Mize are you most excited about?
Jake Rogers.
Does he count though? Because we got him in 2017.
I don't know. Does he hasn't played in the majors yet. I count it.
Yeah, that's true.
That's my metric for it. Yeah. He hasn't had his cup of coffee yet. He still counts as a prospect. So that's for me. And I've been excited about him since spring training last year. And I'm sure there's folks that have been hyped about him way longer than that. But I really liked what I saw out of him in spring training this year, I guess, technically. I'm pretty excited to see what we get out of him.
Yeah, you know, so am I. Real, real excited to see him, and I'm kind of definitely I'm going to be one of the people pushing them to bring him up next year, just because, you know, catchers just, you know, their prime is just short for the most part, and you burn yourself out physically being a catcher, and so I don't see a whole lot of point leaving him in the minor leagues when he's probably going to need a year at the major league level just to kind of get up to speed there anyway. Like, I'd like to see them kind of start that process sometime next year, and not just wait for a September call-up, but we'll see. If he goes to Toledo to start the year, like I expect, and he's hitting, maybe they'll decide the same thing. I'm also hyped for Cody Clemens, but that's a little bit of a ways away. Yeah, but if we're talking new prospects, like guys we got this year, Cody Clemens is a pretty good answer. I'll say Parker Meadows. I am pretty excited about Parker Meadows, even though he's a long way away. But I really liked them being able to. I didn't really think he was going to be available where they got him in the second round, and so I was pretty stoked when they did and were able to sign him. So it's going to be a while till we see what Mr. Parker Meadows can do. But you know, I have the sense just watching him that he's probably going to be better than Austin, his brother, who is now with the Rays and the Chris Archer trade. But yeah, Austin Meadows is a good.
Just made his major league debut with the Rays recently in September.
And he's a nice prospect too. So yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll see what he can do for you guys down there. Jacob is asking, within reason, how would you like to see Al Avila deal with the lack of decent MLB catchers going into next season? We already dealt with that as much as I'm willing to.
Yeah, pick up a vet and then maybe test the waters with Rogers, I think, is both of our answers to that.
Yeah, oh man, he's just asking. These are brutal. In what way can the Tigers imitate the Brewers over the next couple years as they try to get back into contention? I mean, it's just the way it is. You've got to do the things the Brewers did. They built a pretty good farm. They made a couple key trades when there was an opportunity. And maybe that's the key thing, is for Al Avila to be really, really keeping his eye open for those opportunities where a team is going to trade a guy, or an organization like the Braves, you know, the Dodgers, the Padres, one of those big organizations is going to have some 40-man roster issues, and they're going to start shedding some players. And the Tigers need to pick the right guy. You know, they picked Victor Reyes out of the Rule 5 draft this year, and there were guys that were picked up, like Jed Keller, who, you know, had better seasons than Victor Reyes did. Victor Reyes was kind of a long-term play, so maybe that'll still work out. But yeah, they've got to be aware of that and try to take advantage, at least, of teams that are, you know, selling people away.
Yeah, no, I agree.
That's the next guy. Okay. In a hypothetical world where Chris, this is from Charlie Pickering. If a hypothetical world where Chris Illich is possessed by the spirit of his dad for 1 year, all creepy undertones and slim chances of success aside, pretend the Tigers want to put some jet fuel into this Honda Civic of a team and go for it. Assuming we don't go beyond the most we've ever spent in payroll, what would the Tigers' moves be this offseason? Oh, okay. So if we had a blank slate and say like another $80 million in payroll to drop, what would you be looking to do?
I don't know.
See,
I would offer a bunch of really fun 1 year contracts and I just like go batshit for one season and see what happens. Like, I'm not talking like contention. I'm talking you pick up a lot of good guys and just treat them like a functional training unit for the new guys. So you go out there, you grab a Wilson Ramos, you go out there, you got these guys that may be willing to sign for 1 year deals. You're not going to pick up guys like Bryce Harper. Obviously that's bonkers, but like, we're talking about like an $80 million increase. Is Bryce Harper going to sign a 1 year, $80 million deal? And that's what we get. We don't need Bryce Harper.
Well, that's true. Okay. But like,
I think you look at it and you pick up these guys, right? That are really, you know, they're older, they're veteran players. They're still going to maybe want, you know, your minimum $17 to $20 million a year, maybe tops. Or you know, the guys that are willing to take a year at $5 million, $1.5 million, you know, just to come in and really be kind of the rudder and set the ship right, and then kind of put you in a better position come 2020. That, you know, these young guys have had that right directioning. And I'm not even, I besides Ramos, I can't even think of a guys that I would want, because honestly, I don't have the free agent list in front of me and I'm at a loss. I figure you use a little of that money to extend Nick, and then you play with the rest.
Oh, yeah. See, I love that idea. I mean, it's kind of a confusing question because I'm not sure if what he's saying is that, you know, Chris Illich would then just give out like mad contracts, even if they were long term, because he was possessed by his dad for a year, or whether or not it really is like a year limitation. But yes, you know, that's what I would like to see them kind of do a little bit anyway, is give out a lot of short term, like, you know, somewhat overpriced deals to a lot of, you know, solid veterans who, you know, could really kind of fill out the roster and kind of raise the young pups. I mean, if you're talking about getting crazy, you know, maybe I would sign Manny Machado. I'm real wary of someone giving Bryce Harper like $320 million when his speed and defense are declining. I don't have that much of a question about his bat. Like, he's still going to be a really, really good hitter. And maybe he'll get back to being a great hitter for several seasons, too. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine him being the guy that you really want, you know, in his early 30s, still making like $32, $33 million a year and being, you know, Jason Worth.
God.
And there's all kinds of injured guys. Like, you could sign Garrett Richards, the Angels pitcher who's oft injured, and wait, you know, a year for his Tommy John recovery and see if he can come back. You could do some things like that. You could pick up, you know, a bunch of, you know, guys like that, like Tyson Ross, Patrick Corbin, try to add all those guys in on kind of semi-big 1 year deals and see, you know, what they can do and what you can get to really, you know, kind of boost the farm system. You know, it was interesting that we were talking last night about like the Royals and how they kind of built their World Series team, or at least one of the major things they did was spend a lot of money on amateurs and international free agents when there were still no limits on all those sorts of things. And you can't do any of that anymore. The international free agent market is constricted now, and it's only going to get even more so because the FBI now has a new investigation going into at least the Dodgers and probably a bunch of teams. I won't be surprised to see some
Dodgers and the Braves.
Yeah, at least those were the two mentioned. But yeah, I mean, who knows? It might go deeper than that. So you can't do that anymore. But what you can do is overpay to get a couple guys to come here with the expectation that if they have a good season, you know, good first half, you're going to trade them away for a nice prospect package. And doing some of that would probably be a good idea as well. But that is a tough question because, yeah, even if you just decided to add $80 or $90 million to the payroll, it's really hard to see how they could win next year. You just never say never, but yeah, it's hard to imagine that would really kind of play into it. And that kind of wraps the questions. And just to kind of revisit this, before we go in and talk about the postseason, let's talk about Mr. Addison Russell, because we all know we need a shortstop. Addison Russell. I'm just gonna put it this way, and I know this might annoy some people out there, and I don't care because this is the same situation as with Derek Norris. You know, Addison Russell, as far as Major League Baseball is concerned, is convicted of domestic abuse. And it's not the same as a legal conviction, but he's been suspended 40 games, which is silly when you get 80 games for PEDs and he can still, you know, is still eligible for the postseason. There's a lot of issues with the way Major League Baseball is still handling these issues. But for all those people who want to say innocent, not until proven guilty, no, it doesn't work that way. Addison Russell is a member of one of the most powerful unions in the country. They negotiated these standards with Major League Baseball. They all came to an agreement. His representatives agreed to it just like everybody else's did. And so these are the punishments and these are the rules. But as a result, it does kind of feel like Addison Russell's days in Chicago have probably come to an end. I don't know if they'll release him or try to trade him. But you're basically looking at a 24-year-old guy who is a really good defensive shortstop, who has shown flashes of being a good young hitter. And considering everything that he's put himself through and his family over the past 2 years, you know, that maybe that plays into some degree why the bat hasn't come along like some people thought. And to put it coldly, you know, as far as like just a cold, icy baseball decision, the Tigers picking up Addison Russell is probably a smart thing to do. But then again, we also hate this. Like, and it just feels icky.
Just a PR point of view, it's the worst decision they could make. Like I was talking earlier, like we're having a discussion about guys that were available for certain positions, and I was pretty first base was one an example because Daniel what's his face?
Murphy. Yeah,
will be coming up available, and my immediate reaction is like the Tigers don't need that PR. Because we saw what happened when the Cubs signed him, and he didn't do anything illegal. He didn't do anything physically abusive to anybody. People are very up against Daniel Murphy just because of things he said. Yeah. And I'm one of those people. I don't agree with what he said, and I think that him saying it was ignorant. And you know, you can just Google it. Like Daniel Murphy foot in mouth disease. But if I'm that adamant about somebody who just is homophobic being on my team, I'm not going to be any more warm and welcoming to somebody who the MLB's, you know, independent commission determined is guilty of domestic abuse. I don't care how good he is at shortstop.
Yeah, and the details are pretty horrific. And Melissa Reedy, his ex-wife, had a lot to go through as far as like, you know, trying to decide whether or not she was going to testify and, or, you know, to MLB or be interviewed. And she finally did release like a pretty comprehensive statement, that, you know, it's just some damn harrowing shit, you know, like just to see what he put her through. And yeah, I mean, you just don't want guys like this on your team. You don't. It's really hard, you know, everybody wants to win, but you also don't want your team to be comprised of, like, bad dudes. You know, like, how are you supposed to, like, root for these guys? You know, if I...
And I
can't go to a Louis C.K. show, you know, and I'm not... That's easy for me, because I'm not that big of a Louis C.K. fan, but, you know, like, you know, he's trying to make this comeback, and you just see, like... You know, people struggling with this, and it's just like, you know, the whole thing. Like, why don't you just like pass? There's other people. You know, there's other comedians. Yeah, other funny people who didn't torment, you know, various women for years and use all of his power in the industry to, you know, ruin their careers because he was afraid that they might out him. You know.
Yeah, and I look at it and I go, do you want that kind of person when you're building a young upstart team? Is that the kind of influence you want around them? Like, he's young too, but is that the message you want to send to these young guys that no, we're okay with it? Like, we know that you've done bad things, but we're going to sign you anyway. Like, I mean, the Tigers have effectively already said that. They said that when they signed Derek Norris. But then they just didn't let anything happen with him, but they still made that mistake. And I have to think that with the amount of pressure that was put on them with that decision, that for them to sign a guy that's clearly going to go straight to the majors in Addison Russell, they just won't take that heat. Like, I just don't see the benefit to them in that kind of signing. Yes, he's a good player, but like, to what end? Why are you signing him now when he's, you know, he'll hit free agency in a couple years before he's going to be any good to you anyway.
Right. Well, and maybe, yeah.
I don't know. To me, it's not worth it in any stretch. And I think it would be a dumb move by the Tigers to do that.
Yeah. Whereas I think if it was another organization that I thought was more prepared to deal with this well and to really like make sure that Addison Russell was, you know, really investigate him and make sure that he was going to be the one who was influenced by the clubhouse rather than the reverse, and that, you know, there was some contrition, which I haven't seen yet in most of his public comments, I could get behind it to some degree, because I know that. And here's the thing, I'm gonna be mad about it at the same time. But if they did it, I would also like understand why they did it. Because Addison Russell, the thing with the Derek Norris thing was that it was just a totally self-inflicted wound for no reason either.
Because he was a terrible player.
Yeah, because he was also a terrible player, and you know it's ugly to take that into account. But you know, I mean, if you're gonna hurt yourself and take this PR hit and put yourself through this thing where you've got to, you know, rehabilitate this person in your organization and worry that, you know, Addison Russell, you know, maybe you sign him and maybe, you know, by next, you know, February or March or April or whatever, you've got another like Evan Reed situation where he's, you know, got a very credible sexual assault charge against him. You know, you just don't know with a person like that. And it's really hard to find out. And the thing with the Derek Norris thing that, you know, irritated me behind them signing him is that they kind of just, you know, acted like it was no big deal. You know, the league cleared him to play and kind of said like,
we know he's a good kid.
Right. We know him. And then it comes out with Katie Strang in your article, kind of stirring the pot a little bit, that like the Tigers didn't even talk to him. You know, like the Tigers didn't even bring the subject up with him. And it's like, how can you be that irresponsible with it? Like, I can understand that Addison Russell is going to play baseball for somebody. And that's probably just the undeniable fact. He's going to play baseball for another team other than the Cubs next year. And from that perspective, yeah, the Tigers probably could use him, because the Tigers don't have a legit shortstop in the minor league system that looks anywhere close to being as talented. But are you going to do the right things? Are you going to investigate him? Are you going to get some assurances from him and talk to him seriously about, like, you know, we will cut you loose, you know, and burn every bridge if we have even the slightest peep out of you. And you've got to see how he responds to that. You know, is he going to change, you know, his behavior? Does he recognize that his behavior has been terrible? Or is he a guy who's like, hey, this is nobody's business, I'm being framed, and, you know, wants to go on and on, you know, kind of whining about woe is me, in a situation where that's totally his own fault. And those are really tough decisions, really tough decisions for a team to make. And I think you can make the argument that the Tigers being bad and probably attracting almost no attention otherwise, like if they signed Addison Russell or traded for him this offseason, that would probably be the biggest news that the Tigers make all next year. But it probably would kind of go under the radar once the season started, because the Tigers are going to be bad and no one gives a rip about them anyway right now. So I don't know how to handle these things going forward, because you're not, you know, they're not going to ban him from baseball, and, you know, maybe they should, maybe they shouldn't, but he's going to be playing somewhere next year. So how do you know what the right thing to do is? And really, like, how can anyone have much faith that, you know, kind of an organization like the Tigers is necessarily equipped to sort of handle this subject at this point? I don't know. They did, you know, I guess they've been through a bunch of stuff with Miguel Cabrera. Nothing like that, but yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. So that's going to be something to watch out for. And I just felt like we had to kind of bring it up, because I already see plenty of people saying like, hey, this is the only thing the Tigers can do to solve shortstop. And I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. And I don't know that it would eventually be worth it, even if Addison Russell did turn his life around and get his act together, because he hasn't really shown what people thought he might be in Chicago. Hasn't really kind of blossomed yet. And he's still kind of young. So you just never know. But man, these choices are just fraught right now. Well, they should always be fraught. It should always be something that a team agonizes about. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen on that front. But I'm not looking forward to it.
And beyond Russell himself, I'm hoping, because there was a press conference with the Cubs yesterday. It was Theo Epstein's usual. Right after the postseason ends for them, he does kind of a end of season postmortem. And he did address the Russell situation in that he didn't, you know, qualify whether or not Russell would be back for the next season. It did sound like not, but they didn't commit to that. And he talked about what I thought was interesting is he talked about wanting to be more preventative about situations like this as opposed to reactive.
Yeah.
And it's the first time I've ever heard anybody in a clubhouse or anybody in that position of power within the MLB use that phrasing. And I think it's a really important turn if it's not just lip service. Because there are things I think these teams can do ahead of time to kind of ease, not ease, but like to keep these situations from rising. Because I think, and there's never an excuse for domestic violence, but I think a lot of it arises from situations of high stress, of people feeling cornered, of just anger finding no other outlet. And I think if you had a position where guys like this who are away from their spouses for an entire season, like they're gone from February through October, that was a long time to be away from your partner.
And when they are home, they're, yeah. And when they are home, they're totally, you know, they've got to be about themselves.
Yeah. In training mode, in eating mode, and in
still at the ballpark
being
12 hours a day.
Absolutely. And so to me, I think there's not a lot of preparation for these guys to know how to deal with that and to know how to deal with the stress that that puts on a relationship or the anxiety and pressure that that puts on an individual. And I'm of the opinion that I think if we destigmatized mental health and addressed it as part of the overall well-being of an individual and created something like a mandatory counseling for all players, that like once a week everybody goes in and sees the counselor and talks about things that have been stressful for them and things that they've been feeling, that not only are you taking that pressure off for guys who may have those mental health issues and may feel like they need to bury that, like we saw it, and I hate to make the comparison, but like we saw that with Roberto Osuna last year. Before any of the stuff came up about his domestic issues, he had a big thing where he spoke out about the mental health issues he was having and all the stress he was under. And I'm not saying one equals the other, but I'm saying that if he had access to an understanding staff and reliable mental health counseling on the regular, that things might have been very different. And I think that the MLB has to understand that there is a mental aspect to all of it, and they need to start treating the players as a whole instead of just worrying about the bodies and fixing the bumps and scrapes. I think that it's a really important thing that they start looking at the emotional and psychological well-being of these individuals too.
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, we talked about this earlier, like it is really weird, and this part of it kind of came more from the steroid era, but it's just strange, you know, that Major League Baseball has an investigative body comprised of their own, you know, detectives, officers, enforcement arm that is out there investigating people and doing all that sort of thing and basically functioning like a police force for their own players. But then they don't also, but then they're not going to be responsible for, you know, making sure that these guys have good access to, you know, to mental health care. And not just them, but, you know, I think, you know, like all those points you made are great, and it should be extended to their families too. I mean, it seems to me it would really help if, you know, if team, you know, wives could, you know, or girlfriends could have somewhere to call, you know, to say like, hey, you know, I mean, he's been a complete bastard, you know, the last couple of days, you know, things feel like they're kind of spiraling. You know, I just want to report this, and I want there to be some kind of intervention with him. We need to, you know, do something. If they had that aspect, you know, as well, a lot, maybe some of these things could be avoided. I mean, it's tough because, you know, on top of everything else, like, you know, a lot of these guys came up very spoiled, you know, like as long as you were a good baseball player, you had people running cover for you on everything else, and you were never held responsible. You know, and this is something we see from, you know, presidents, senators, you know, wealthy business people, you know, all the way down. Like, it doesn't just happen in, you know, in the trailer park or in the hood or whatever people think. It's just as prevalent everywhere, and there's just a lot of entitlement that goes along with, you know, being very good at one thing that people value. And it just kind of skews everything for a lot of these players, I think, you know, a lot of athletes in all sports. And yeah, I mean, you, once the league decided that they were going to tackle, you know, some of this, and they had to, you kind of have to start tackling all of it. You have to be a lot more comprehensive about it. I mean, if you can spend, you know, $100 million to have, like, a your basic own, like, Pinkerton force, you damn well better have a whole bunch of psychologists and marriage counselors and, you know, and everything else as well, because, you know, you're responsible.
I think most teams actually do have a psychologist, which is the thing that kills me. It's like, the guy is available to you, but who wants to be the one guy that, like, has to go seek out the shrink? Which is why I think if you just made it mandatory for everyone, then there is no stigma. It's like, oh, now you're off to see Dr. Dave? Yeah, I've got him at 2. Like, you don't need to talk about it, but everybody's going. It's just a part of the routine. And I think that that would help a lot more people. Like, I mean, honestly, I think most of us in the world could use mandatory counseling once a week.
Yeah, but like, it would help to have an impartial arbiter, like, hear us out.
I would love to be able to sit down with somebody that's not, you know, maybe that should just be like, Ashley, go to therapy. But
right. Like, but when you have a bunch of alpha male type dudes, nobody wants to be the guy who has to go.
Absolutely. So I think that that takes it all away. It makes it easier. It just evens that playing field. So
yeah. And also, and having it available, you know, to the family as well, to support all of them, you know, I think would definitely help as well, to kind of help get a bead on some of these things before, you know, before someone snaps and does something awful, you know, Aroldis Chapman style or whatever. And, you know,
honestly, like, think about that. They're like, now I look and I kind of, we make fun of the Royals for some of the morality programs that they have, right? Like, they have entire sessions dedicated to don't watch porn, it's bad. But can you imagine if teams had that kind of family and, you know, outreach available, where every season they're like, okay, well, you know, here's something for the players' wives, where we talk about, like, or here's something for every, like, married, like, like, men and women to come in and be like, here's the stressors that you may encounter for the season, and, like, here's how to maybe deal with those things, and, like, just workshop shit ahead of the season. Like, you know, here's some good resources, and here's, like, some good things to know. And, like, you know, nobody has to get up and role play anything, but you just have a sit down and somebody comes in and presents, and at least give those resources. I mean, if the Royals are going to waste time talking about how bad porn is, I think every team could have, like, a couple of days ahead of every season where they're like, you know, here's how to keep up your healthy eating during the season, or, like, during the off season when things kind of get, you know, trickier to maintain. And I don't know, maybe I'm just too idealistic, but I think that there's that whole concept of holistic everything is something that teams should really embrace.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you look at, like, the United States military, obviously that, you know, that's a job and a role. Well, this, I mean, it goes for any military, but because we're still, you know, we still have deployments going on everywhere, you know, they take that stuff seriously, you know, more seriously than MLB does, despite the fact that, you know, those guys don't necessarily make very much money, and they're just kind of regular people working this bizarre job where you might have to go overseas for 9 months or a year and then get rotated back. You know, like, talking to, you know, major league players about, you know, like, what's going to happen to you on the road? You know, like, do you have a strategy? Like, how are you going to keep yourself occupied and doing positive things, you know, as opposed to, like, just going out and getting trashed every night and letting the night lead you into God knows what? You know, what kind of strategies can you have for yourself to be proactive? What kind of things can the team do as far as activities to kind of, you know, not only, you know, sort of keep guys out of trouble, but also, you know, give them some of those bonding exercises, you know, like, whatever, you know, whether it's just, you know, whether this all comes down to Fortnite tournaments, you know.
Yeah, you know what, maybe if that's it does. What it is, you know, who's to say that's bad if we promote that sort of thing instead? I think that there just needs to be a shift in how teams approach the entire player, and not just the body that gets them runs and catches.
Yep. I totally agree. And as long as they're, you know, as long as they kind of have to, because of their business model and the fact that they're in entertainment industry, as long as they, you know, they have to take, you know, bad behavior at least somewhat more seriously than, say, like our, you know, your or my employer might necessarily. You know, it just behooves them to be more proactive about these things. And yeah, I mean, I could slag on Theo Epstein a little bit because, you know, like the Cubs, you know, for all the good things about the Cubs, you know, there's kind of been, you know, a little bit of a dark side over the past couple of years, from winning the World Series on, but you know, they're not alone in that. And you know, who knows even how much goes on that we never even hear about. So yeah, it's definitely something that, you know, is going to have to be addressed in more creative and more proactive ways than it currently is, because teams are constantly trying to play catch up and looking bad and looking old and looking out of touch and, you know, and looking as though they don't care enough, looking, you know, mercenary. Well, as long as this guy produces, you know, none of this is any of our business, you know, we're just a place of work. You know, and they don't get to have that. You know, they can't hide behind that anymore. Where, well, you know, it's just like anybody else's job.
But it's not.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's very, very different. Very different. You know, so yeah. So I mean, it's a tough topic, and I don't know. We'll see if rumors start kicking up about the Addison Russell thing. At which point we're gonna end up having to deal with this again. And good times. Let me tell people out there, like, none of us make any money doing this, and so, you know, if any of you out there think, like, you know, getting clicks really, really excites us that much, no. No, we don't do these things for clicks. We do these things because they have to be brought up. You know, I mean, these are the key subjects of the day. And yeah, so if that's a topic that has to be brought up, we will confront it in its due course. But hopefully the Tigers just kind of shy away from that and come up with a better option. There are teams out there who have shortstops who are somewhat blocked in the upper minors and second baseman as well. You know, maybe trade for a guy like that who's kind of getting held up. So maybe something like that is possible. And we'll talk about that when we get more toward the offseason. To wrap things up, I mean, the postseason is underway. We've seen a couple wild card, you know, we saw like two play-in games. We saw two wild card games. None of them was exactly thrilling, but they were all kind of pretty well-played games until the A's just kind of got trucked yesterday. Any early impressions on the postseason? Because I feel weird this week every time. Like the play-in games and the wildcard games, like, it's just crazy shit happens. Like, you know, if that game with the Cubs and the Rockies would have turned on Nolan Arenado and Javi Baez hugging between second and third base, like, the world would have just exploded.
Oh my god, like, the riot. Can you imagine if that had been, like, the thing that changed the course of that game? I loved that moment, by the way.
So did I. And you can't tell me Javi didn't want it.
Oh yeah, no, he just, like, he went right in for it. But you know what, I honestly don't think that the intent there was to block a double play.
I think it was just
a reactionary moment where you're running right at a guy and it's just like, bro, he just, like, what do I do here? Either you run face first into him or you give the guy a hug. And so he just went with the Javier Baez move. And I'm sure there are people out there that will contend that, you know, it was intentional and he meant to block. I don't think that was the case at all. I don't know. It's been weird, right? Because you got two game 163s and then immediately into two wild card games. And it's like,
Meanwhile, the big boys are just sitting around for, like, you know, 4 or 5 days again, which is just weird.
Yeah, or, like, relatively speaking, some of the worst teams in, like, record-wise, like, the Indians aren't great compared to everybody else, but they got, like, a full week and a half of rest out of this. And, you know, it's a very strangely built off season. Like, I'm not sure that the most deserving teams are in. it's fun to watch. And right now I have zero horse in the race because every single team that I write for or care about in any major way is now out of the running with the Cubs being done. So I keep vacillating wildly between who I want to see win. It's like, oh, the Rockies would be interesting. And then based solely on the fact that I like Arenado and purple is a fun color. and then I'm like, I can't quite make myself root for any of the AL teams right now.
Like, yeah,
I was really leaning into the A's, and then they disappointed me yesterday, and I can't care about the Yankees or the Red Sox, and obviously I'm not going to cheer for the Indians, which is funny because Jay Markle reminded me yesterday that I did once say that if the Indians transplanted every single player on that team onto any other team, I would really like that team.
Yep.
Because we all know my weirdo obsession with Trevor Bauer, who I do not like, but I weirdly love.
Yeah, same here, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they posted an article today where he talked about building the physics of his perfect pitch. And he's just such a little weirdo. I love his weirdo brain.
There was another great article on him about, you know, like, being with the Diamondbacks and how he was almost ready to quit, you know, and then how, like, he and Mickey Callaway butted heads when he got to the Indians and was ready to just give up the game and just, you know, like, what a stubborn kind of ox he is about some of these things. But he's just a damn genius when it comes to pitch design and stuff.
But, like, how do you not like a team with Francisco Lindor and, you know, Jason Kipnis and Andrew Miller? Like, every individual person on that team I like.
Yeah. And I love Ramirez. I love Mike Clevenger.
Mike Clevenger's just a monster with his delivery and pitches. Like, you know.
Total surfer bro.
Yeah.
He and Daniel Norris would be perfect together.
Oh, my God. Like, so I like all the individual aspects of the Indians. And I feel kind of similarly about the Yankees some days, too. Like, there's so much fun on that team. Like, I could probably take apart the Indians and the Yankees and build a super team that I really loved. Right now, I'm just annoyed with the Astros over Osuna, so I can't get excited about them, even though I really like their players, and obviously Justin Verlander. But, you know, we had that moment last year. Verlander got his ring. I don't think I have quite that same attachment to it as I did last year.
Yeah. I'm rooting for the Astros again, but it doesn't feel quite like it did last year, that's for sure. I'm a little bit more flexible.
I was definitely into it last year because you wanted to see, we just lost Verlander and he wanted that ring so bad and you were so there for it, right? And this year I'm like, I don't know, if either the Brewers or the Rockies take it, I'm okay with that. It might be nice to see the Dodgers get it because they just keep getting left out at the very end, it feels like.
I would really hate for Clayton Kershaw to never win a World Series. I don't want to root for the Dodgers, but yeah, that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wrote a comment about this the other day because I'm just one of those people. I'm always surprised at how many, like, fan bases other teams really hate or how much sort of, like, aggro there is toward others because I just don't have any. And I don't know if it's because I grew up at a time when you could kind of only watch the Tigers and not even, you know, like, all the games in the 80s. It was like, you know, I could see the Cubs on WGN sometimes and maybe the Braves once the Ted Turner TNT network came on and whatever. But basically, I didn't have that much contact with any of those teams unless they played the Tigers on TV or on the radio. And other than that, it was just sort of baseball cards. And so I don't have these visceral, like, hatreds from all these, like, old rivalries that some other people do. I don't like the Twins very much, and I can't root for the Yankees or the Giants. But beyond that, like, the postseason for me is just, you know, I'm just a total hoe out here, just, like, changing affiliations constantly and, like, oh, I'm jumping on this bandwagon. And then, like, oh, I changed my mind. You know, like, 2016, I was kind of like, oh, it's time for the Cubs to win this one. I'm all about it. And then Rajai Davis hits one home run and I'm like, oh, screw it. I'm in for the Indians. Like, at the very end. I'm like, nope, Indians. So I was
for the Cubs in 16. But, yeah, I get it, right? Like, you want to follow the best story.
Yeah, I do just kind of ride the narrative for sure. Yep. So that'll probably happen again. Just kind of leave it open-ended. But I don't mind. I was happy. I wasn't necessarily happy to see the A's lose, but I didn't really feel like the A's really had much chance of going any further without enough arms. But so I didn't mind Boston and New York ended up getting matched up. Obviously, everybody's happy about that. Ratings will probably be great, blah, blah, blah. And I get a chance where I can root for Ian Kinsler, J.D. Martinez, and Rick Porcello to just smash the Yankees. So that'll be fun. I like to be able to root for the Red Sox, even though, you know, like, there's just so many historical issues and then the fan base and God knows what else. So I'll probably end up backing off of them, but for at least in the ALDS, I'm all on board with the Red Sox on this one.
Oh yeah. Anything that's going to crush the Yankees out of it, that's all I care about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think that's one thing that, you know, everyone can get behind. I mean, I'm surprised a politician in America hasn't run yet on an anti-Yankee play.
No, they need those New York votes, man.
Yep. Yep. They're powerful out there. It's true. But, yeah.
That's where all the money is.
And I can't root for the Giants, like, because I just thought everything they did this year was just insanity. And they won 3 World Series, two of which I thought their team kind of sucked, and they just sort of lucked through those. I mean, you don't really ever luck through them, but I've just never been on board with the Giants. And right now, I'll be perfectly happy to just revel in their suffering for a while. So, yeah, take that, Giants. There's the salt that I've got for you.
Suck it, Giants.
Yep. All right, well, I think we're going to wrap it up. I don't know, you know, we're basically done for the season, and I don't know, we were kind of talking earlier, like, we'll probably jump on if bigger topics come up, and we'll have some shows along the way where, you know, I don't know, maybe I'll bring on our two prospect writers and let them kind of talk about the farm system and what they saw. Maybe get some outside folks in here to interview. We still would kind of like to get the Dans, Hasty and Dickerson, in here this off season to talk about some things. But it's going to be sporadic. It's been a long season. We're, you know, we're slaving away for basically nothing here. And I think, you know, at this point, we're kind of like keyed to just enjoy the postseason and relax and be able to just write an article or two a week and, yeah, and just watch baseball and enjoy it without having to sweat over it too much. So, I don't know. I kind of just like to thank everybody for a great season. Once again, thank everybody for supporting us through the Patreon at www.patreon.com/blessyouboys. You know, that support there, obviously, you know, we don't expect anyone to, you know, go giving us $50 a month or, you know, yeah, putting huge amounts of money into that. Really, just the fact that, you know, some of you out there care enough about it and recognize the work that we do and appreciate Bless You Boys. Really means a lot to us. So just having some of you out there donating really, really feels good and is pretty motivating. So I really like to thank you guys all for that. We'll see if we can do a little better job maybe next season of kind of, I don't know, keeping regular content going up there and maybe trying to get some giveaways and contests going.
Absolutely. Yeah, we kind of fell off on that, and there are opportunities out there. So I think we can work a little harder on that.
Yeah, it was a tough season, you know, losing Kurt Menching and our girl Grace right at the beginning of the season, you know, kind of put us behind the eight ball, especially Ashley, myself, and Rob, and it was a bit of a scramble. So, yeah, thanks to our staff for kicking in. A lot of them are, you know, very busy people as well. So we appreciate all the time everybody took to kind of contribute and pick up recaps and news items and all that stuff throughout the year. But, yeah, I think next year we'll probably have it a little better dialed than it was this year. It was a little bit of a scramble at times.
Yeah. What on earth are you talking about, Brandon? We had everything perfectly under control.
Yeah. And the thing is, we do, but it is kind of, it is hilarious sometimes how it gets done. Like, it just makes me laugh. Yeah. Like, if I think, like, what would I think from the outside about what goes on behind the scenes here and how shoestring it can actually be sometimes and then turn out, like, really, really, you know, pretty darn good. And that, you know, that's just kind of a testament to, the experience of the staff in general at working under high pressure and short time frames with almost no information or direction.
Yeah. Yes. we are miracle workers. Please bow before us.
Yes. Worship us as your personal gods, at least temporarily, maybe throughout the solstice. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll, you know, at some point we'll be back probably to talk postseason, but you probably won't hear from us for another week or two at least. We're just going to kick back and watch some playoffs and hopefully get a whole bunch of really good baseball and exciting legendary moments that will live forever.
Yes!
Woo! All right. Ashley, have a good night.